Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Only 29% of American women identify as feminists. And my ex-guest thinks this is a big problem. In fact, Catlin Moran wrote a whole book about why you and every woman and even every man should be able to get up on a chair and scream, "I'm a feminist." And all of the problems that stand in the way of us doing so are also documented in this book. Catlin Moran, author of the British bestseller How to Be a Woman, which, by the way, is slated to become both a movie and a sitcom over there. Catlin Moran, welcome to the show.
Hello, my darling. How are you?
Good. Nobody's called me darling on the show in a long time. So your name, which is spelt like Caitlin but pronounced Catlin, and there's a story behind that, right?
Yes. I mean, mainly one of how stupid I am. I picked it out of a saucy novel that I read when I was 13. There was a character in it who was called Caitlin, and I aspired to her life of riding around on ponies and having sex with good-looking men called Alexander. Because I was a speed reader, I just kind of misread her name and presumed that she pronounced it Catlin. So even though I stole her name as my writing pseudonym and spell it Caitlin, for some reason I insist on pronouncing it Catlin. I'm really sorry. That's very annoying.
And now it's distinctively yours. And anytime anybody says Catlin, from now on, everybody's going to think of you. And I'll bet you like it that way.
Well, it allows me 10 seconds of thinking time, because when they're saying Caitlin, I can go, no, it's Catlin. It allows me 5 seconds to think of a good joke that will make me seem funnier and cleverer than them.
In the book, you have a very easy way of determining whether one is a feminist. You say any woman who wants to be in charge of her reproductive organs is automatically a feminist. Otherwise, yes, she should just, quote, turn in her right to vote and give in to patriarchy. Is it really that simple?
I mean, the whole argument about whether you are or aren't a feminist, basically, if you are a woman in the first world, in the Western world in 2012, you are a feminist. You're born a feminist by default. You're born into a feminist world where you go to school and are equally educated alongside boys, and you get a job, and you when you get married, you're not your husband's possession, and heaven forbid, if you were raped, that would be seen as a crime and you would want the person to be prosecuted, and you're allowed to vote. So you live in a feminist world, and unless you've actually actively gone to Parliament or to the White House and handed in your right to vote, then you are a feminist. And that's why I always find it funny when sort of prominent women stand up and go, oh, I'm not a feminist, or people write angry think pieces going, oh, I'm not a feminist. It's like, well, dude, you know, were you not a feminist in a feminist world, you wouldn't be allowed to do that. You'd be around the back of the hut in your medieval village biting down on a spoon while you gave birth to your 19th baby. So, you know, we live in a feminist world. You're a feminist, I'm a feminist, this is a feminist world.
So by your definition, Phyllis Schlafly and Ann Coulter are both feminists.
I don't know. Are they nasty ladies? Are you saying that in a kind of, are they?
No,
they're right-wing ladies.
Explicit, especially Schlafly. They're explicit anti-feminists from a politically conservative perspective.
And what do they do? Have they got jobs? Are they kind of, do they earn money?
They appear to have professional lives.
Well, then I suspect that they are feminists then, because otherwise they would just simply be working as maids or being married off by their fathers to suitable men from a neighboring village, kind of. Unless that's happening to Phyllis Schlafly, then she is a feminist, yes.
So, listeners, if you want to call in for Catlin Moran, author of the British bestseller How to Be a Woman, now released in the United States, maybe you want to answer the question, when did you decide that you were or weren't a feminist? 212-433-WNYC. Did something happen in your life? When did you decide that you were or weren't a feminist? 212-433-9692. 212-433-WNYC. Or you can call and ask Catlin Moran anything. Or post your question or comment to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. You say that one of the challenges facing women is that most believe in the theory of gender equality, but that many believe deep down that women need to prove that they're as good as men, and that it's not just men who believe this, but women too. Where do you see it?
Well, this was, I mean, because one of the things that I heard so often was this theory that men secretly hate women. This is something that you hear a lot. And that's one of the things that's put, I think, a lot of women off saying that they are feminists, because the traditional view of a feminist is of just a very angry woman who hates men. And I just didn't, it's just never been my experience that 48% of the population, men, hate the other 52% women. You know, we all hang out quite a lot together. We're all kind of, you know, quite close to each other. We give birth to each other and marry each other and work together. But I was trying to work out why there is, for both men and women, this sort of quiet little voice that goes, well, women haven't done as well as men, have they? I mean, there's been no female Beatles, no women have founded banks, no women have controlled mighty armies that have conquered kind of massive empires. You know, when you sort of stack up all these you know, this massive tract of history in which we haven't done stuff, then to me it seems that the reason we might sometimes think, both men and women, that women are inferior isn't that men secretly hate women. It's just that they've noticed that we just haven't done as much as them, and they can't yet treat us as equal. To which I would say, well, yes, that's because, you know, it's only very recently that women have been allowed to be equal to men. And I'm sure when we've had 100,000 years of equality, we will have done just as many things as men have. But for the meantime, we're still kind of recovering. I mean, it's really, you know, it's really difficult for women of my generation to get their heads around the fact that, you know, 150 years ago, we were kind of treated like animals. We were not seen as equal to men intellectually. You know, women had to go out there and argue and say, yes, I'm as intellectually capable as you are. I will need to have a vote. I need to have autonomy over my own body. And we had to argue our way up from being something that was kind of, you know, roughly on a par with animals to being, you know, properly proving that we were human beings. So it's only relatively recently that women have been able to contribute to society, and I suspect that we still don't even know how we would like to form society. I suspect the way that women think about themselves and what they want to do in 200 years' time will be quite different to what we're doing now, when it's still only in its infancy.
Marianne in Westchester, you're on WNYC with Catlin Moran. Hello.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that I've always considered myself a feminist, and I can remember when Alan Alda stood up and said that he was a feminist. I went to Barnard College. I have a problem, though. I don't know why feminists, and I don't know actually if, you know, there is such a broad spectrum that they could have different ideas, but when women become pregnant and have children, possibly multiple children, they're the only ones who can. And it changes a person, and it changes them socially. It changes the requirements that they have in their lives. And politically, I don't see feminists as saying that, yes, women can be mothers, and that is a legitimate professional choice. Can you comment on that?
Well, yes. Well, that is the big one, isn't it? It's making the things that make us different just as valid as the things and the places that we can compete equally. I mean, I suspect we won't know how we can integrate that into society until we're a lot further down the line with us being equal with everything else. The thing is, if we got 20 minutes, I could tell you my amazing plan for how I would genuinely change the world, which is in our country, we've become kind of very irreligious, and there are a lot of empty churches, which people tend to turn into apartment blocks or shops. And what I would do instead with those empty churches is turn them into work-from-home hubs, where men and women could just go with their laptops and work all day. They would have the children in a creche downstairs. You would have, like, kind of dry cleaning businesses and businesses that sold ready meals there. So you could work in the daytime, go down and see your kids whenever you wanted to. You wouldn't have to commute into town, which can take hours and ruins the environment. You'd just be walking around the corner, the whole family, and then at the end of the day, all walking back together, because I think you need to look at infrastructure in order to be able to, you know, this is a world built by men for men, for men to do men things in. And I don't say that in an angry way, because I find this world very useful. You know, men invented the Beatles and St. Paul's Cathedral and massive motorways that connect countries. It's fantastic. But women haven't yet built the country that they need and that will work for them. And so I think it is practical, physical things like that that will need to be done before women can fully contribute to society.
Do you think if women had half the power running countries in the world that there wouldn't be as much war?
I think, I think the big problem at the moment is that I was thinking about this recently. We are generally countries that have a lot of problems. And the thing that we need most is brain power. And when women still have to leave the workforce when they have kids, and when women still aren't promoted in the same way that men are, so they don't get to contribute properly, countries are just stupider, to the point where if you look at a map of the world and you look at the most troubled countries, the countries that have the most poverty, the countries that have the most war in them and disease, they are almost always the countries that are most sexually unequal, the countries where women are oppressed and are not allowed to vote or hold government. And that's simply because the biggest resource that they have, more than that they would need, more than water or minerals, brain power, isn't being utilised. Recently there's been this stuff about the CEO of Yahoo, hasn't there, who's been given the job, who's pregnant, and people are going, you know, kind of like, can women have it all? Can you be the CEO of Yahoo and still have it all? And I love how that's always a question that's focused at women. It's like, along with doing the school run and having lovely hair, and attending to our manicures and stuff, on top of this, we're supposed to work out how to have it all. And to me, that seems to be more of a concern of society. Like, you know, women shouldn't have to work this out because we are pregnant and busy. You know, whole countries need to work out how women can do more in the workplace because we need the brain power there.
So David in the west on the west side of Manhattan has a question that may relate to that and the whole Marissa Mayer Yahoo situation. Hello, David.
Yes, hi. Wonderful show. I just must say that the title of your book, How to Be a Woman, confuses me a little bit because by nature, women are maternal. Women are the bearer of the children. And you're saying that a woman automatically becomes is automatically a feminist because she enters this world. Now, the title of your book, How to Be a Woman, isn't that kind of a statement of feminism in some sense of the word?
Well, see, unfortunately, the way that it's printed doesn't really say the tone of voice that you should say that that title in, which should be How to Be a Woman, because the idea of me telling people how to be a woman is inherently amusing. And, of course, if there are, 4.5 billion women in the world, then there's obviously 4.5 billion different ways to be a woman. So the idea that I could tell you how to is ridiculous. But when I wrote the book, the idea was that most books that are aimed at women, nonfiction books, are kind of self-help books. And they give you a massive list of things that you should go off and do, like kind of meditate and get a day-to-night wardrobe and get a capsule wardrobe and amazingly brilliant, innovative birthday parties that you can give your children and stuff. And it basically, being a woman, turns into a massive and usually quite expensive to-do list. And I come from a kind of more hippie kind of sort of radical background and stuff. And so I wanted to write a book that just went, nah, you know what? You don't have to bother with hardly any of this stuff. When you read a woman's magazine, it's kind of telling you, you should worry about this and worry about that and buy this thing here and are you an alcorexic? And all these kind of ridiculous, you know, have you got cankles? All of these ridiculous words that you've never heard before and gives you something new to worry about. I was just saying, you know what? You don't need to really bother with any of that at all. As long as your kids are alive and upright and breathing and you're getting 8 hours sleep a night, then things, that's all you really need to worry about.
You know, on this Marissa Mayer thing, a recent Daily Beast article reported that she could be led off what they call the glass cliff, which you probably know is a term coined in 2008 by British researchers Michelle Ryan and S. Alexander Haslam, who discovered a pattern. Companies hire women to be in leadership positions when it's almost impossible for them to succeed because the state of the company is beyond repair, making them scapegoats of failure. Have you noticed anything like that?
Well, the one thing that I have noticed is that time and time again, you only usually have one or two token women in a business. That are there to kind of, you know, just sort of go, look, well, we've got one high-achieving woman here or two high-achieving women here. And they're always there as pioneers. But no other women come and join them. And this is what's been sort of, this is sort of the pattern that you notice for the last sort of 20, 30 years. And this is why I am in favor of employment quotas. The analogy that I use is that if you were running a zoo and you had an enclosure full of penguins, which are men, and you put one camel in there, then the camel would just kind of start becoming quite freaked out about being surrounded by penguins and would start acting really bizarrely and would just kind of eventually probably go a bit mad and fall over and die, which is why you need to have... But if you had a quota of camels that had to be in there and keep the camel company, then the camel will feel more normal. It's very difficult for a woman to feel normal in an environment that's all male, because obviously being male is normal in that environment and being a woman is not normal. So that's why I'm pro-quotas. And the big argument that you have against having employment quotas, sort of 50% women and 50% men, is that if you did that, you would be employing women who were stupid and incapable and weren't able to do this work. To which, of course, the reply is, well, that situation's already happening anyway, but with men. Because if you have an office that's 70, 80, 90% men, then, of course, a proportion of them are going to be incapable of doing their jobs and are going to be screwing up. So, you know, at least there will be an equal amount of stupid people of both sexes in an office, which I think that's kind of my definition of a feminist world of equality, kind of an equal amount of stupid people of both sexes all working together and fighting over the photocopier.
We'll continue in a minute with Catlin Moran, author of the British bestseller How to Be a Woman, now released in the United States. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Catlin Moran, author of the British bestseller How to Be a Woman, which is slated to become both a movie and a sitcom over there. We'll ask her how you turn a feminist track into a situation comedy. This book is being released in the United States now, and we'll see if it becomes as big a thing over here. Let's go back to our phones. We have a couple of teenagers calling in, and I want to talk to both of them. First, Sunny in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Hi, Sunny.
Hi there. I'm 17, and I've identified as a feminist since I was 12 or 13, and I think that feminism is obviously a really wonderful institution that's done so much for women everywhere, but you can't ignore the really problematic history of it. For instance, like the first wave of feminism in the 1920s had a lot of racist undertones, and in the 70s, feminism became this kind of institution that was seen as only a safe place for middle-class white women. So you say, Catherine Moran, you say that by being born into the modern world, a woman becomes a feminist. But what do you have to say about women who choose not to identify as feminists because they're not white or they're not middle-class or they just don't find that the movement is as focused on them as it should be?
Well, that is, I had for years wanted to write a book about. I come from a working class background, very poor family. We were kind of brought up on government benefits. And for years I'd wanted to write a book about feminism. But I thought I can't because I never went to university. I've got no educational qualifications. And I kind of figured that I would have to be older and wiser before I could write something about feminism and how I thought about being a feminist today. And then it just suddenly occurred to me that you don't need to have any qualifications to say what you think feminism should be. But the idea of this book is that I've written what my idea of feminism should be now, how I would like it to be reinvented. And my biggest dream would be that people would read this book and go, I'm going to write a book called How to Actually Be a Woman, or No, You've Got That Wrong, this is How to Be a Woman. And everybody collaborates on making the kind of feminism that they want to see in 2012. You know, I come from a rock and roll background, and the whole idea there is that if you hear a record that you like, then you form a band and you try and first of all to sound like the band that you like, and then you know, you sort of develop your own sound and then you go off and invent a new genre. And that's what we need to have with feminism. I don't see it as an academic thing. I see it as all revolutions are, as entertainment and rock and roll. So we, you know, absolutely, if you don't agree with the, you know, the past of feminism or the things in it that you don't like, as there are in the histories of every movement, then you have to start inventing your own one. At 17, my God, you've got a 20-year jump on me. Go for it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Emma in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Emma.
Hi. I go to an art high school that's 80% girls, but I hear every single day them saying that they believe that women should have equal rights, but they're not feminists. And I'm just, like, afraid that our generation is going to be, like, down on feminists because we have, I mean, at least in my high school, there are so few people who identify as feminists.
Emma, what do you think the distinction is that your friends are making? If they say, I believe in equal rights, but I'm not a feminist, what do they consider feminism to be?
I think we as feminists have a reputation as the bra-burning dykes of the 70s, and that, you know, more feminine, mostly straight girls are afraid of that or are disgusted by that, and so that's the distinction they make between feminism and being for equal rights.
Catelyn?
Well, that is very much, to just spend 20 seconds going on about how amazing I am, that was very much kind of what it was like in this country last year. But because this book has sold so much, it's like been in the top 10 for the last year. And you know, kind of it really has started a new conversation.
You've completely changed the world.
Well, I literally have totally, slightly, in a tiny way, been a total amazing hero.
Because I mean, now I'm in the middle of the book, and it's unbelievable, so I agree.
Thank you. Oh, God, and I didn't pay her to say that either. She's literally out of her own free will, done that, her own feminist free will. But I mean, what I wanted to do with the book, because the thing is, I realize, you know, I mean, I was born a feminist, I'll die a feminist. And to me, it's not a debate. It's just feminism is right. Women being equal to men is just right. But time and time again, you notice if you go up and you see this in politics, if you go and argue this is right and this is wrong, all that happens is people have a massive argument about what is right and what is wrong. And that can go on forever. If you really believe something is right, you should just try and make it cool instead. You know, just try and make it look like it's fun. And I see being an equal woman who isn't scared of things and can make jokes about what her life is like to be fun. So that was what I tried to do with the book. And kind of, you know, I don't want to have to, like, tell, you know, feminism shouldn't be like fiber or vitamins that you feel like you should eat to be a good person. You should just kind of stand on a chair going, I'm a strident feminist. And there's an amazing T-shirt that's got my Marxist feminist dialectic brings all the boys to the yard, which is from the Kelly song Milkshake. And, you know, that's my kind of feminism, rock and roll, hip-hop feminism.
All right,
thank
Emma,
you.
Stand on a chair, but be careful. Keith and Elizabeth, you're on WNYC. Hi, Keith.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I've been a feminist for 40 years. I go back to 1972 when I decided to become a nurse. I'm a registered professional nurse in New York, and I certainly think that my choice of careers and the interactions I have on a daily basis with my peers and colleagues would certainly classify me as a feminist.
Hooray! Hurrah! I'll give you a T-shirt. Let's all stand on a chair.
Really? And you
always find it's a very good point, though, because women, particularly famous women, are always asked at some point, usually as a trap, would you describe yourself as a feminist? And they love it if some movie star goes, well, no, you know, I believe in equal rights, but I wouldn't describe myself as a feminist. They never ask men that. You never get, you know, as soon as some new beautiful movie star boy turns up or some new rock star turns up that's a boy, they never ask him, are you a feminist? And it's actually more of a valid question to ask a boy than it is a girl. Because I think all girls, even though if they don't know yes. what the word feminism means, believe in equal rights. The interesting question is, do boys, you know, are the 52%, you know, the 48% of the population who do still have the power, you know, do you believe in equal rights? That's the question I always like to ask of people who are making deliveries to my house or even just people who are passing me on the street.
Keith, do you think working in a mostly female profession affected your outlook on this?
I don't think that it really. I think I've always had that outlook. I've always felt that we were, that all, everybody was equal. That men, women, black, white, that we've always been equal. As a black person, I never actually felt completely equal until Barack Obama was elected. But I always thought that in terms of men and women, that we were always equal. And I supported the Equal Rights Amendment, and you know, we unfortunately haven't won that battle yet.
And but Keith, how many people don't just refer to you as a nurse, but as a male nurse?
Usually only once, okay? And I will always clarify with them that horse doctors are not doctors who are horses. Horse doctors are doctors that only take care of horses.
Gotcha. Keith, thank you very much. Catelyn, do you see differences in feminism between Britain and America?
Yeah, I keep getting asked this. I have to say no. They always expect you to go, yes, yes, over here we have Hugh Grant, and he's very much for the ladies, whereas there in America, but no, to be honest, it's exactly the same. We're all dealing with the same annoying problems of hair and ignorance and uncomfortable shoes and panties that are a little bit too small. So no, not at all, really. Plus, over there, you've got the amazing Lena Dunham, who I just think is just a woman revolution on her own. And then you've got Tina Fey as well. We don't really have figures like that over here. So I'd say you're winning, but we're still dealing with the same problems pretty much.
So I've been saying throughout this segment and in framing it that your book is going to be made. It's such a hit in London, it's going to be made into a movie and even a sitcom. Is that true?
Yeah.
I can't picture, you know, Betty Friedan's The Feminist Mystique having been made into a sitcom.
Well, she just didn't try hard enough, did she? No, when it was we started doing the film because it was a massive sort of bidding war, and I write with my sister Kaz, and we were trying to work out how we could turn the book is part memoir, part rant. So it starts on my 13th birthday, and it kind of goes all the way through my life and all the lessons that I've learned about feminism, kind of all the way through my life, taking me up to the present day. And I was saying to my sister when we were trying to work out how to adapt it for a movie, the only other books I can think of that sort of shows the story of someone's life but occasionally breaks off into polemic is the Bible. And she lay on the floor and cried laughing for about three quarters of an hour and went, "Are you seriously comparing your book to the Bible?" And I was like, well, obviously not in terms of global significance, but structurally, yes. So we've just sort of taken the middle section and kind of fictionalized that a bit. But we're trying to make the world's first feminist rom-com. So we believe that this is going to be the first sitcom, the first film that's ever been made, where, for instance, the main female character isn't beautiful and she will put on over a stone in weight during the course of the film and will be happier because of it, which I think for women would be as an uplifting and amazing thing to see as the Death Star exploding. If I saw a woman put on some weight and be happy with it by the end of it, I'd be punching the air and going, yes, I'm going to come back and watch this again. So that's our plan.
By the way, my producer Megan says maybe they did make The Feminine Mystique into a sitcom and it's called Mad Men.
That's true. That's a zinger. Man, I can steal that for a think piece now. That's fantastic.
That is a good zinger. Credit Megan Ryan, senior producer of The Brian Lehrer Show, United States of America. We just have a minute. Feminist books come out all the time. Why do you think yours struck such a chord over there?
Because it is, it's really funny, even though I say so myself, because I wouldn't have been interested in a revolution if it wasn't funny. For me, being funny is kind of the most important thing. I like a laugh. And secondly, it's just very, very truthful. I've made myself very vulnerable. In this book, I talk about getting my first period, about learning how to masturbate, which I do whilst thinking about Chevy Chase in the film The Three Amigos.
You talk about getting an abortion.
I mean, I describe what it was like getting my abortion after I had two children because I realized I'd never read that description anywhere. And that seemed really weird when one in three women will have an abortion. I'd never read an account of what actually happens and how you feel about it. And I'd also never seen any woman talking about her abortion and going, actually, I didn't feel guilty. You know, that is an option. It's an option that this will happen and you'll feel fine with it. So
that has
to be very truthful.
The last word. Catlin Moran, author of How to Be a Woman, a British publishing sensation now out in the United States. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, darling. Thank you.